Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Mouse. This is the show where we affirm the power of dreams, coincidence, and imagination to bring some more joy and juice and creative vigor into our lives. We have a wonderful guest today, Andrew Holacek. I'm very excited we managed to lure him onto the show. Andrew has for many years, for decades, been a teacher of Vajrayana Buddhism, a meditation guide, a teacher of lucid dreaming and dream yoga. He's a man of many parts. He's a concert-level pianist. He's studied biology. He studied dental surgery. He walks in the foothills of Colorado with his dogs. He has drunk deep in the wellsprings of Buddhism in India, Nepal, and I believe Tibet as well. And he has a love, a passion for the full spectrum living, as he puts it. Welcome, Andrew.
Robert, it's such a delight to be with you, really. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Well, I'm delighted you are on. I should mention that you've written a number of books, very important books about dream yoga and related themes. Three of them are Preparing to Die. One of them is my favorite, is Dream Yoga, and the most recent one is Dreams of Light, where you introduce a practice of lucid dreaming in the day, so to speak, called illusory forms, and we'll get you to talk about that. But Andrew, I'd like to start things because you know I'm a storyteller. I can't help it. I have to tell stories, and I have to try to get stories from other people. So I'd like to tell you one of my stories of an incident in the bardo of, you know, natural life, the bardo between birth and death, and just get your reading on it according to the way that you understand things and what's going on in life, death, and in between. So it's an episode from what I like to call the bardo of air travel. It's back in the days before the pandemic when I was flying to places all the time. I don't do that much anymore. Anyway, I was flying to London many years ago. I had troubles on my mind. It doesn't matter now what they were, but I had troubles. They were practical things, money things, things of that nature. So I disembark from my airplane at Heathrow Airport. I get on the tube. I get on the underground train to go to central London, and as I step into the car, into the carriage, a roly-poly Brit in a rather good country suit, a tweed suit, looks at me and says, "The Buddha says, walk on the bridge, don't build on it." I'm thunderstruck. I mean, Brits don't talk to strangers like this on trains. And what has he just said? It takes me a moment to hoist it in. But when I get it in, I realize he's just put everything in my life into the necessary perspective. This world is a bridge between other lives, between other worlds. Don't take things so seriously in the appearances of this life, to slip into your language already, Andrew. And I'm wondering as I sit down opposite him how this happened, because now we are talking, so to speak. He's delivered his message. A conversation unfolds, but it's a very routine conversation. I mean, it's pleasant. He talks about his home in Malvern. He talks about gardening. He talks about the weather. It's an entirely English conversation, and I can't understand what happened to the man who said, "The Buddha says, walk on the bridge." So there you are. There's an episode from the bardo of everyday life, which was incredibly orienting for me. And I suppose you might say it dispersed my illusions that the things I was so concerned about were all that important. What do you make of that? How do you place that in your understanding of everything?
First of all, it's so wonderful, Robert. Thank you so much for sharing it. I love these kinds of stories because there was so much to say here. You know, one of my dear friends, Jeffrey Kripal, talks about this wonderful maxim that I just adore where he says, the stranger something is, the truer it is. In other words, the more in contact with reality that it is. And so these kind of weird rips on the fabric of space-time and these otherworldly, like you mentioned, bardo or liminal types of experiences, to me, are just magnificent displays of the kind of connective tissue between inner and outer. And basically, you know, an intimation on one level of the non-dual, because this kind of, I mean, if you append the label synchronicity coincidence to it, one of the things for me, Robert, that defines a synchronous experience is when the boundaries between inner and outer dissolve. And there's this kind of weird, just otherworldly type of experience. And so on one level, I really smells like that to me. It has that wonderful scent of the otherworldly, this kind of liminal experience where it doesn't fit into the normal conventional modes of reality, right? Now, why, for instance, this gentleman would almost like channel this in this introductory comment and then transition into a more kind of traditional British conversation, as you put it, that remains a bit of a mystery to me. But you never know. You know, I mean, to me, what it might suggest is the porosity, the permeability of the very structure of the self sense. So we could go very deep into the pool on this, where perhaps for a moment there, who knows, he was channeling your diamond, or who knows, something may have come through that he was picking up on. And this particular event, to me, is just another one of these marvelous pointing outs of the dreamlike nature of reality. And it would happen to such an elite dreamer like yourself on one level is no surprise to me, and I'm just delighted that you would share something like that with me. I love these sorts of things. So that's what comes to mind, Robert.
Well, that's very good, Andrew. I like that. It did feel as if something else had taken over his vocal cords for a moment. I mean, in a very benign way. You've probably got many examples of this in the teachings and traditions that you study and practice. But I think of William Butler Yeats, because, you know, I tend to get killed whenever I can. In one of his poems, he has the dream god Angus borrowing the vocal cords of the snoring, sleeping husband of Queen Maeve to deliver a message. I mean, it's not somewhat of that order of things, but something else, whatever you want to call it, is using this human vehicle for a moment.
Yeah, isn't it beautiful that, to me, what it does is it challenges the kind of solidified, reified approaches that we have to who we think we are and to what we think reality is. You know, I mean, it's a wonderful opening, a wonderful introduction, perhaps, to what happens when we open ourselves and others spontaneously see open to, you know, just the wondrous magic and mystery of the world. And also for me, Robert, the other thing it points out is, again, using the languaging that I'm most familiar with from the kind of Buddhist Hindu traditions, you know, reality is not made of matter. A reality is made out of the fabric of heart, mind, spirit, what the Buddhists would call emptiness. And when they talk about emptiness, especially the Buddhists in particular, they say, well, with the right view of emptiness, everything is possible. But without the view of emptiness, virtually nothing is possible. And so within that kind of more formalized language and structure, this is also possibly an intimation, a glimpse of the empty nature of reality, that when we drop our usual boundaries, our usual preconceptions, the way we contract and shrink wrap reality in these convenient ways, this conceptual hallucination, right, that we all more or less agree on,
I think we need to pause for, that's very good, Andrew. I think we need to pause for a moment for those listeners who are not familiar with the Buddhist vocabulary for these things.
Okay.
Because emptiness to somebody who is not versed in your tradition and its language might have a very different meaning than it has as you're using it. Because for you,
absolutely,
it might even mean reality, right? It might mean spaciousness. It might mean sorts of things. So talk to us. I mean, I understand the interplay of appearances and emptiness in the Buddhist tradition is fundamental. Talk to us a little bit about what these words mean and about what emptiness is as you use the term.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you for making that correction. Yeah, so emptiness is a feeble attempt to try to define the ineffable, the mysterious. And I think better translations for me would be openness, or boundlessness, or freedom. And basically what it means in a somewhat kind of technical sense, and then I'll make it more colloquial and open, is that emptiness really means if you take a very, very close look at anything, and this is precisely what our brothers and sisters in the physics community, the quantum physicists, have been talking about for well over 100 years. You take a very close look at anything, and you won't find any real thing there. What you will find is instead a vast interconnected nexus of causes and conditions. So emptiness in this regard is like ecology. It's like a deep ecology. What it really means, emptiness really means fullness. It means that when you look very closely, everything's empty of self-nature, like the physicist will tell you. But being empty of self means full of other. And just briefly, the beautiful Zen teacher, Thich Nhat Hanh, who died recently, talks about this in terms of interbeing, that everything is just made of everything else. And so, therefore, when we have these experiences like you're talking about, they shatter these conventional notions of a solidified kind of concretized, or the word is reified, reality. Oh, it's just clunky matter, you know, like boundary-laden and highly dualistic. And so this kind of breaks down that classic, and I would say erroneous, way of looking at things, and basically just pulls the rug out from underneath one, which is a classic kind of so-called emptiness experience. So something like that, does that help?
It is helpful, thank you. We do struggle with some of the words here, I mean, for those from outside vocabulary that you use. But one of the terms that we're also going to have to explain, but I'd like to hear you describe it as a practice more than simply as vocabulary, is illusory forms. You're teaching, particularly in your most recent book, Dreams of Light, the need to practice a yoga of illusory forms in order, in a sense, to become lucid with your eyes open in daylight, which will in turn help you to become lucid in dreams at night. And just to quote you for a moment, this is actually from Dream Yoga. Quote, this is Andrew. I'm quoting Andrew. Illusory form is a practice that involves continuously reminding yourself that everything you perceive is illusory or is not what it appears to be. Right. So riff on that, please. Tell us how what is the practice of illusory forms?
My total delight, and you really nailed it. It's basically, in the Tibetan view, Robert, the practice of illusion or the practice of illusory form, it's actually the main practice. Dream yoga is considered a subset of illusory form. And so much to say here, but fundamentally, in terms of, like, I'll tell you how to do it, and then maybe I can say a few words like, okay, well, that's interesting, but why would I do that? There are three types of illusory form practice, but the most kind of accessible one is when you literally, it sounds almost patronizing, but you simply go about your day and you pause and reflect. And you can either do it as a kind of assertion or proclamation by pausing and saying, this is a dream. I'm dreaming. And it's very interesting, Robert. I invite you and your listeners to do this for a couple minutes and notice perhaps how your world perceptually starts to change. Another way to do it for people who are a little bit more in the line of inquiry or questioning, because really, as you know, questions are more important than answers, is you can say, you know, am I dreaming? Is this a dream? And, okay, that sounds great. Well, why would I do that? Well, a number of reasons. One is, in the world of dream yoga, in the world of Buddhist approaches to reality, we want to overthrow the tyranny of appearance. In other words, and I invite you and your readers to really look at this. Is it in fact not true that you and I, suffer in direct proportion to how solidly we take the contents of our minds and how solidly we take the contents of reality? In other words, to what degree do we reify, solidify, concretize this reality, which is fundamentally dreamlike in nature? And again, the scientists will tell you this, the mystics will tell you this, that reality, if you really take a very close look to it, is in fact dreamlike. This is another way to talk about emptiness. So the practice of illusory form is indeed the practice of empty form. And once we overthrow the tyranny of appearances, what we do is, it's like a peaceful transfer of power, which has a little bit more applicability these days after January 6th, right? And what I mean by this, Robert, is that in the most profound ways, we unwittingly give away our power. we unwittingly project onto a world that is fundamentally fluid, empty, dreamlike, porous, translucent, transparent, we are the ones that freeze this dreamlike, empty reality into concrete and steel. And then we wonder, why is the world so hard? Well, goodness, the world isn't hard. We are. And so this is a way to really look very deeply that we don't see things the way they are. We see things the way we are. And so what this does, the practice of illusory form, is a way to have peaceful transfer of power. Nothing in the so-called external world, or including the contents of your mind, has any power to adversely affect you unless you imbue that phenomena with power, with that kind of power. And so what the practice of illusory form does is it penetrates through the seeming appearance of a reality. You know, you still take things, this is important. When you, one way to talk about the fruition of illusory form is you still take things quite seriously. So the near enemy to this approach is, you know, Robert would be say, oh, just, it's all just a dream. It doesn't matter what I do. I mean, that's spiritual bypassing at best or nihilism at worst. And so what we want to do is actually overthrow this tyranny of the power that we've imbued onto the phenomenal world, bring that power back onto ourselves, and realize, oh my goodness, we're always projecting onto the world. And really, practically speaking, if you want to blame someone for your misery or praise and thank someone for your ecstasy, look in the mirror. It's all about a personal empowerment. And how we give that power away whenever we solidify, reify, concretize things, and we do it all the time. And then, therefore, how we can liberate ourselves from it. And so there's one powerful maxim here, Robert, and then I'll pause. This connects both to illusory form and dream yoga, and I think it's lovely. It's the following. This is a dream. I am free. I can change. This is a marvelous thing, if in fact it's true. The world is plastic in nature. You know, the scientists tell you this when they talk about neuroplasticity. This is a way to talk about the plastic nature, the empty nature, the illusified nature. So one last thing. When illusion is defined here, it's defined in a very specific way, in the way that you suggested. It doesn't mean that things don't exist. No. It means that looks can be deceiving, that things actually have a status that is not in harmony with the way they appear. And so basically what the practice of illusory form does is it brings appearance back in harmony with reality.
Well, that's very heartening, Andrew. Thank you. Let me ask another fundamental question as we really get going here. You know,
okay.
What is the difference between dream yoga and lucid dreaming? And I'm going to quote you or paraphrase you again.
Okay.
What is the difference between dream yoga and lucid dreaming? You know, there are many things to be said about this, and lots of people, whether they're into one or the other, will think about mantras and yidams and deity yoga and guru yoga and, you know, visualizing Tibetans' syllables on lotus petals and so on. But you make an observation, in your book, Dream Yoga, which I found really quite fascinating and, for me, very true and helpful. You said that basically lucid dreaming emphasizes the difference between waking and dreaming, while dream yoga emphasizes the similarities between waking and dreaming. I found that very interesting. I mean, for me, that went to the heart of things, because in that sense, I might be closer to dream yoga than I realized, because I'm constantly aware, without need to make myself aware, of the resemblance between waking and dreaming.
Wonderful, wonderful. You're getting to some really heart essence topics here. And So in my listing of what I call the nocturnal meditations, and my mapping, as you know, Robert, there are actually now five of these practices in my mapping. But the two principal ones, in fact, are the ones you just mentioned, lucid dreaming and dream yoga. And so this is the way I relate to them. Lucid dreaming for me, just in terms of like, purposes of contradistinction, okay? Lucid dreaming for me is largely, psychological in nature. And then largely about self-fulfillment. And that's magnificent. You can learn so much about yourself in the arena of the lucid dream. Dream yoga, which, again, in my languaging, transcends but includes lucid dreaming. In other words, dream yoga envelopes lucid dreaming. You can't really do dream yoga without lucid dreaming. So it includes it, but it also transcends it. And by that, what I mean is, instead of kind of the psychological approach, which again is incredibly viable, there's no criticism here whatsoever, instead of the kind of psychological kind of trajectory, dream yoga is more spiritual in nature. And it's not so much about self-fulfillment, it's more about self-transcendence. And so therefore, we transcend, but include what we've learned and established on the platform of lucid dreaming, but then we take it a step further. And it goes deeper into the very nature of mind and reality, fundamentally using this term that we did introduce, emptiness. Many, many dream yoga masters will tell you this, that the dream arena is the ideal classroom for emptiness, to study and explore emptiness. And so in my 9 stages of dream yoga, there are 9 particular progressive stages in my mapping of this. Each one of these stages is really a progressive meditation on emptiness, a progressive meditation on the nature of mind and reality. It gets a little bit deeper, a little bit more profound, the farther one goes along from stage 1 to stage 9. But it's fundamentally a way to attain what the Buddha attained. The Buddha was arguably, Robert, the ultimate lucid dreamer. And I was questioning this myself. Okay, the Buddha, literally the awakened one, what did he wake up from and what did he wake up to?
Well, this is a wonderful moment to pause, Andrew. The Buddha is perhaps the ultimate lucid dreamer. We're talking to Andrew Holacek, author of Dream Yoga, Dreams of Light, and other books. Wonderful teacher, wonderful expositor, wonderful explainer of these things. We'll be back after a short break with Way of the Dreamer.
Where can you find out about dreams and the dream world? MossDreams.com. At MossDreams.com, you can find out about Robert Moss, his work, and discover the way of the dreamer. Read numerous articles and essays on almost every facet of dreams. Find out Robert's class and workshop schedule. Read reviews and so much more. Visit MossDreams.com to find your way of the dreamer. That's MossDreams.com.
Robert Moss has a deep engagement with the dream world, and now you can take a crash course from this master of active dreaming at your own pace. That's right. You can get Robert's 8 exciting half-hour programs on a new DVD set called Way of the Dreamer. Share Robert's story as a dreamer and dream healer. This dynamic 3-DVD set can help teach you how to find your way through your dreams to realize your full potential. Don't wait to learn the practical dreamwork techniques that can help you understand how to attain better health, emotional stability, spiritual awareness, and more. Order Way of the Dreamer DVDs today from Amazon.com or MossDreams.com. That's MossDreams.com.
Vistaprint. I'm sure you've heard the name. Over 17 million small businesses and consumers have used Vistaprint for printed products, ranging from business cards and brochures to invitations and thank you cards. Why? Because Vistaprint has the lowest price guarantee, and you can design your products with templates or upload your design. And they have free products. 3-day rush service and satisfaction is always guaranteed. Try Vistaprint. Just go to the HealthyLife.net advertiser page and click on the Vistaprint logo.
When you're looking for bedding, department store prices can shock you. Well, be shocked no more. Sell steak cheap, not cheap steak. That's the motto of Anna's Linens. Although they don't sell steak, they do sell the best bedding, bath, and home decor items. They strive to provide their merchandise at extreme value to their customers, and they do it. Great everyday prices on everything and military discounts. Plus, if you visit them online, they have clearance items and internet specials. Visit them online now at HealthyLife.net's advertiser page.
We're HealthyLife.net, reaching and helping a worldwide audience without hype, without shock, and without shenanigans.
Welcome back. This is Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. Our wonderful guest is Andrew Holacek. He started telling us about what dream yoga and lucid dreaming have in common and how they differ and how dream yoga, of course, is pursuing a more spiritual theme than lucid dreaming. I'm going to quote Andrew to Andrew just one more time. It may not be the last time, but here you are, Andrew. This is another thing that I liked. In trying to understand the ditch where you were digged, to quote the King James Bible, which I know is not part of Buddhist scripture. Here's Andrew. When I finally came upon the Buddhist teachings on dream yoga, which is when you strive to have lucid dreams with the goal of doing specific practices with them, I knew I had come home. I found that a very personal and very telling statement, Andrew, in terms of your orientation and in terms of what dream yoga has to offer beyond lucid dreaming. So that might be a point with which we can pick up again.
Lovely. Yes, lovely. I before I turn to that, Robert, with your permission, and I'm thrilled to speak to that because it is such a true kind of personal reason why I have such passion for these practices, that I did want to say a little bit again about this importance of understanding kind of ultimate lucidity, because when I refer to lucidity, Robert, I see lucidity along with a bunch of other kind of terms in the nocturnal business as a type of code word. Lucidity for me is code language, code word for awareness. And so therefore, a lucid dream is a dream that you're aware that you're dreaming. And so when I talk about the Buddha, literally, etymologically, the awakened one, or the opened one, as the ultimate lucid dreamer, by that what I mean is, again, in terms of a question, what did the Buddha wake up from? What did he wake up to? Well, he woke up from the nightmare of a reified reality. He woke up from the nightmare of materialism, of physicalism, of seeing the world as solid, lasting, and independent, what I call the unholy trilogy. Another way to talk about duality. He woke up from that nightmare into a dreamlike reality, into an empty reality, a reality that is, in fact, more non-dual, where the illusion of solid, lasting, and independent, this again is the way things appear. When we overthrow the tyranny of appearance, this is what we're overthrowing. And this is why it's so challenging, because when we proclaim in a non-lucid way, you know, this is what ultimate lucidity means, is using the principles of lucidity as typified in the lucid dream to fundamentally wake up to and bring awareness to the dreamlike nature of this reality, to see through, to overthrow the tyranny of appearance that things seem to be about that lasting and independent, i.e., dualistic, which is what we take as a given, is what we take as axiomatic. In precisely the same way, we take the contents of our dreams at night in a non-lucid dream to be real. And this is why we suffer, because appearance is not in harmony with reality. So you're having a nighttime dream. Why are you suffering? Because you're mistaking those appearances to be what? Solid, lasting, and independent. And when you have a moment of lucidity, the tables are immediately turned. It's like, oh my gosh, this is just a dream. It's just my mind. And therefore, in that moment of lucidity, everything changes. What previously controlled you, your habits, if you like Eastern terms, your karma, now becomes under your control. And so this is precisely what the Buddha did. And in fact, in Buddhist languaging, they talk about three types of dreams, as you know, Robert. The first is the nighttime dream. I love this term. They talk about the nighttime dream as the example dream or the double delusion. Now, how interesting is that? What that implies is the real dream, so to speak, is this so-called waking reality. And so what one does in the practice of particularly dream yoga is using the example dream, the double delusion, we attain lucidity in that dimension of mind to extrapolate those insights back to the primary delusion, the so-called real delusion, the real dream, which is waking reality. So we use the nighttime intimation of lucidity there to wake up from the nightmare of this reified reality. And there's another third type of dream, which I think we're going to transition into in just a second, which is called the dream at the end of time. That's the third type of dream. And this, of course, are the Bardo's, the death teachings. And so I'll pause for a second before we head into those deeper waters to see if there's anything.
Yes, we're going to talk a lot about that, Andrew. We're both keenly interested, and everybody should be interested, in how the practice of dreaming relates to the practice of dying. Just one personal comment.
Sure.
Since I regard basically all realities and states of awareness I inhabit as dream or dreamlike. I mean, this is my basic attitude, whether I'm waking, eyes open, lying in bed, you know, drifting, meditating. The horizontal meditation is my mode rather than sitting meditation. As we have discussed before, you know, sleep dream, lucid dream, it's all a state of dreaming. For me, Andrew, the important thing is to recognize that I have choice in all of these situations, and to notice how I exercise that choice and take responsibility for our exercise, how I exercise or fail to exercise that choice. I think you and I have probably agreed that we are responsible for our actions and choices in any reality. There are lucid dreamers who say you can do anything you like. I don't agree with that. I think we're responsible for what we do in some sense in any order of reality. So that's part of my attitude too. So what is more important for me perhaps than lucidity, as it's discussed in secular terms anyway, is the idea that we can be volitional or intentional dreamers in any reality.
I could not agree more, Robert. And let me just say a couple things. You know, I talked earlier about this kind of code languaging, lucidity being a code word for awareness. Well, in my renderings, Robert, I see dream as code language for manifestation of mind. And this is exactly what you seem to be intimating, that really, in one way or another, we're always in a dream. It's always one manifestation of mind or the other. And very, just very briefly, parenthetically, which we'll return to shortly, this also answers perhaps one of the most common questions about death and dying, like, where do you go when you die? Well, in this kind of version, you simply transition from one dream to the next. But more importantly, I could not agree with more of what you just said, that the great gift of lucidity slash awareness is this capacity for choice. Prisoners don't have a choice. And by that, what I mean is when we're prisoners to the non-lucid mind, we're prisoners to our habit patterns. We're prisoners to, in Eastern terms, our karma. And so this is magnificent. If you're a non-lucid to your dream at night, to the contents of your mind at night, basically, what chooses, what decides the experience in the non-lucid dream? Your habits choose. There's no volition there. You're simply buffeted around by the dictates of your unconscious mind and its habits. And in exactly the same way, both in the dream at the end of time, the Bardo's, which we'll get to in a second, and also in the so-called waking reality, you think you have free will? You think you're making free volitional choices here? Well, the neuroscientists will tell you this, 95%, and reflect on just the magnificence of this number in a perverse sense, 95% of what we do is dictated by these unconscious processes. So basically, our habits choose what we're doing even now. This is why we're so reactive. This is why our lives are just buffeted around in these non-lucid unconscious ways, and we suffer in direct proportion to that kind of non-lucidity. So this is magnificently important, especially when you die, because as one of my main teachers once said, when he was asked repeatedly, what is it that reincarnates? He said brilliantly, your bad habits. Those reincarnation processes are happening right now. We're reincarnating all the time right now. And so, therefore, you can start to see with these processes, somewhat in the Jungian way, right, when we bring unconscious processes into the light of consciousness, this is precisely what you're suggesting. Now we have a choice. Now we can actually decide, do we want to capitulate to these habit patterns, or do we want to take a new track? And once again, that beautiful maxim, this is a dream, I am free, I can change. That means I don't need to be so entrapped in my non-lucid habits.
Very well said, Andrew, and said with passion and said with clarity, and I love to see the two things riding together. I'm just going to throw out as a provocateur something else that I noted from your writings before we take our break, so you don't get to respond in depth yet. Quote, you don't actually need any of the induction techniques. All you need is to relax. That's few hundred. I really like that.
True.
Of course, we have great difficulty in our culture in achieving attentive relaxation or relaxed attentiveness. We're talking to Andrew Holacek. What a great conversation. What a great teacher. We'll be back for more on dream yoga, lucid dreaming, and how it all relates to the practice of death and dying after the break.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you are interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
Gingivitis, gum disease, words you don't want in your mouth. But according to the American Dental Association, 3 out of every 4 adults will develop gum disease. Now there's an all-natural way to fight back. Introducing the Natural Dentist Herbal Gum Therapies. Developed by a dentist and clinically tested by a leading university, the Natural Dentist Herbal Gum Therapies daily oral rinse and toothpaste was proven to kill the germs that cause gum disease better than the leading brands. Regular use was proven to reduce gingivitis and bleeding gums. The Natural Dentist contains herbs like echinacea and aloe vera and has no alcohol or sugar or harsh chemicals. The Natural Dentist is guaranteed to work or your money back. You can find the Natural Dentist at most drug and health stores, including Trader Joe's, Save-On, Walgreens, and Long's Drug Stores, as well as most health stores, including Whole Foods Markets and Wild Oats. Call 800-615-6895 or visit www.thenaturaldentist.com for more info.
You're listening to HealthyLife.net, the radio network that brings positive talk with positive change to make your world a little better.
Welcome back. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Moss. Go to my website, mossdreams.com, for all sorts of goodies. We're talking to Andrew Holacek. Andrew, what is your website?
Say again? I'm sorry, you broke up.
What is your website?
Oh, thank you so much for asking. Yes, it's andrewholacek.com, and then also that leads listeners to this wonderful support platform called Night Club, which is, in fact, designed 4 years ago explicitly for the purposes of supporting dreamers who enjoy this type of exploration. But andrewholacek.com is my main site.
Great. All right. We're going to move on to discussing how dreaming and various practices of dreaming relate to dying. I have lived for many years with a Lakota saying which goes as follows. The path of the soul after death is the same as the path of the soul in dreams. I mean, that is of the essence for me. Of course, you can then write books explaining how all the different ways of dreaming that might carry the soul along different paths. You say in dream yoga that dream yoga and sleep yoga are fundamentally about preparing for death, evoking Plato, who said in the Phaedo that philosophy is fundamentally about preparing for death. It's never too late or too early. I think we would agree to prepare for death. So talk to us about how the practices that you teach and practice yourself are relevant to death and dying.
Yeah, oh my gosh, now you're really getting to my passion.
Small question.
Because, yeah, you know, I actually originally got into the nocturnal meditations, dream yoga and sleep yoga, principally through what's called Bardo Yoga, which in my mapping is the 5th of the nocturnal practices. And just for completion, the first one that we're leaving out is just liminal dreaming. And so what I noticed, Robert, was when I was studying the absolutely voluminous literature on death and dying in the Tibetan approach, archetypally represented, of course, in the famous Tibet Book of the Dead. But that's just one of hundreds of volumes of commentary. I keep hearing all the time in this literature, dream yoga, sleep yoga, dream yoga. You know, dream yoga came about principally in the Tibetan tradition as a way to prepare for death. And just briefly, lest we think our Western intellectual traditions don't think otherwise, as you know, the Greek god of death is Thanatos. The Greek god of sleep is Hypnos. How are they related? Well, they're not just brothers. They are twins. And so, therefore, this incredible intimate relationship between sleeping, dreaming, and dying. And very specifically, in the Tibetan approach, they talk about what are called the three death bardos. The first one is called the painful bardo of dying. And bardo, by the way, as you know, but for our listeners, bardo, the Tibetan word that means gap, transitional process, or in between. And the idea, fruitional aspect of bardo yoga is to realize that we're, just like with a dream, we're always in a bardo. But the idea here is that three types of death bardos, and these are directly, just exactly like the Lakota approach, these are directly connected to what happens every night when we fall asleep. And by this, what I mean is when you lie down tonight and fall asleep, you're going to go through a similitude, a concordant experience of what the Tibetans call the painful bardo of dying. It's called painful because at the end of life, it hurts. It's painful to let go. What the practice of bardo yoga does in conjunction with dream yoga, it transforms the painful bardo of dying into simply the bardo of dying, where it's no longer painful. Why? Well, because you learn how to let go before you're forced to let go. But to return to our journey, at the end of the dissolution process, when we fall asleep at night, we fall into deep dreamless sleep. Well, dreamless is a concordant experience, a similitude of the second bardo, which is called the bardo of dharmata, or the luminous bardo of dharmata, where dharmata is a Sanskrit word that basically means reality, isness, suchness. And so basically what this suggests is whether we know it or not, just like Lakota's assert, every single night we return to the common bed of mind, the common bed of reality that we all share, which is this fundamental formless dimension of our mind, this formless dimension of awareness itself. And we can come back and talk a little bit more about that. But the most important one for us is the third of the bardos, which is called the bardo of becoming, or literally the karmic bardo of becoming, the habitual bardo of becoming. And this is directly correlated to the dream state. And in fact, the great, great tantric master Padmasambhava, who actually wrote the Tibetan Book of the Dead and brought Buddhism from India to Tibet, he proclaims in his teachings that if you can maintain, now this is an archetypal number, we shouldn't reify it and take it literally, but if we can attain lucidity 7 times, then that's basically a suggestion of have some constancy with lucid dreams. He said you will be fully prepared to wake up in the dream at the end of a time and attain lucidity. And so I'll pause after I say the following, because this is completely connected to what you were saying earlier. That if you don't take control over your mind, your experience in the dream at the end of time or the bardo, what does? Your habits, your bad habits. And therefore, by working with the bardo teachings, the karmic bardo becoming in particular, and its intimate relationship with dream yoga, you can gain a tremendous sense of familiarity of the type of the kind of the dimension of the mind that the Buddhists, the Tibetan Buddhists in particular, proclaim. This is very much what you can expect to experience at the end of your life.
Very good. Let's just jump in a little bit deeper, Andrew. We've gone deep already. Let's jump into pure realm, pure land boa, pure realm transfer. I was rereading Dzogchen von Lopp last night on this. He basically says that if you could learn to travel to places in your dreams, then you can learn to travel to the Pure Land or other desirable locations in the afterlife. He's talking a little more closely to my language, actually, than you do, because he's implying that dreaming may be traveling to different realms, and that if we develop that habit of dream travel, this is my language, of course, then we can do it after death. What do you have to say to that?
Yeah, spot on. So this is a classic stage in dream yoga. In my cartography, it's stage 7 out of 9. So a little bit more, this is where you're entering a little bit more graduate school level practice. I often playfully refer to these nocturnal meditations as a kind of night school, you know, this really interesting form of learning, education, or pedagogy, which I argue, honestly, is really the pedagogy of the future. But basically here, the idea is that in stage 7 dream yoga, you create what's called a special dream body. It's made out of what's called prana mind, this very subtle dimension of body, obviously closely connected to what the Western world knows as out-of-body experiences and that sort of thing. And then exactly like you were saying, what Pumla Prabhupada, who's like one of my teachers, talks about, is that then one has the capacity to travel with this body into different domains, into so-called pure lands. And therefore, in exactly the same way that you're talking about, if we gain this proficiency in the nocturnal arena, you mentioned this term briefly, this is a type of POA, or movement transference. The more typical Western translation is ejection of consciousness. And so, therefore, this type of dream yoga practice actually constitutes one of the main types of POA, called dream yoga POA, where one trains to move the mind volitionally, there's that term again, to move the mind volitionally into purified state of dimension, of reality. But now how we can take this theme, Robert, and tie it into emptiness, what actually constitutes a pure land, people are wondering, well, geez, this sounds like heaven, what's a pure land? Purity is a code word, there's another code word. Purity is code word for emptiness. So when you actually realize a purified reality, what are you doing? You're purifying the reality of reification. You're purifying it by overthrowing the tyranny of appearance. And so this becomes immediately applicable because, yes, on one level you can transfer to a so-called pure land outside of this dimension, but the real fruition is kind of tantra pure land, talk about esoteric and going deep, which is the ultimate lucidity. You remove the cataracts of confusion, you open the aperture of your awareness, you see that this reality right in front of you right now, this is a pure land.
Good point to pause, Andrew. We must take a break, or else my producer will be very unhappy. That's a good moment in which to leave it as a cliffhanger. We're talking to Andrew Holacek. We're now talking about getting yourself to the best kind of afterlife. We'll be back soon after the break.
For all your live or pre-recorded webcasting needs, come to earthchannel.com. Get your web-based message out to a select group or the whole world. It's easy. A pioneer in webcasting, earthchannel.com provides the best products and services to big corporations and government users. And now, this same technology is available to you. They have the best earthcast encoders, servers, and products to meet your technical needs. But wait, don't want to mess with technical stress? No problem. They'll do it for you. EarthChannel.com is your answer. You can use webcasting for lots of things, like advertising, marketing, customer support, training, and don't forget, web radio and TV. In fact, you're listening to a live Earthcast right now, so come to EarthChannel.com. Actualize your audio or video webcasting needs today. You can't beat the friendly service or the price. Call earthchannel.com at 800-849-8978. That's 800-849-8978.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. M-O-S-S-D-R-E-A-M-S.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you are interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
You're listening to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Moss. We're having a most wonderful conversation with Andrew Holacek. He said that some of this is graduate stuff. Well, I know a lot of you listening are graduates, postgraduates in dreaming, and very, very advanced in dreaming. Whether you're Vajrayana people or not, you are dreamers. So let's talk a little bit more about an idea I've discussed with Andrew in other forums, which is one of the oldest ideas about dreaming, and see how it is consonant or not with his understanding and practice. I mean, the oldest comprehension of dreaming by the humankind, as far as I can track as a historian, is the idea that dreaming is fundamentally traveling. Yes, there are different kinds of dreams, but interesting dreams are often, if not usually, the product of either the dreamer going on a visit somewhere or receiving a visitation. From who? From another dreamer, from a spirit, from a god, from a daimon. When I started dreaming of a Native American, a Rondiwano, woman of power, whose language I had to learn in order to talk to her, and talked about my dreams of this woman who lived 250 years ago to an elder from Onondaga, the traditional capital of the Six Nations of the Haudenosaunee, the Iroquois Confederacy. He said very matter-of-factly, oh yes, you made some visits and you received some visitations. In other words, traveling beyond the body, traveling to other places, transpersonal, social. So back to the idea of the pure lands and the poa of traveling to pure lands, pure realms, realms of emptiness, realms of awareness. Andrew, you know, does the idea that dreaming is traveling and therefore it might prepare you for travels to alternate, alternative environments in the interworld or the afterlife, does that fit with your understanding of things, or is that a different way of looking at it?
Yes, indeed. And this is where, and I love this, Robert, because this is where we have to increase our level of granularity and refinement here, because I think there's two ways to approach this notion of travel. On one level, a more conventional relative way is the way that you just articulated, that yes, when you have a dream, you travel to these different particular dimensions and you exit your body and you go there. And this is completely resonant with conventional approaches of poa, ejection of consciousness, that one can actually move one's mind voluntarily, that's what the poa is at the moment of death, into a pure land, most famously known as Sukhavati Devachan, the most accessible of all the pure lands. And in fact, it has a reality, a status, ontological status, if you like, philosophical terms, just as real, or I like the idea, just as unreal, as this so-called physical world that we inhabit, for sure. But I'm actually more interested, Robert, and I'm curious to see how this lands with you, a little bit about this very brief thing you pinged at the end about the second way of working with lucid dreaming in terms of just relaxation. That's more an absolute approach to lucidity, by the way. A more absolute approach to this notion of travel is basically you're not really traveling anywhere other, because it's a little bit like what the physicist John Wheeler, student of Einstein, once said so beautifully. Again, this is quantum physics, not to say that we should capitulate to the high priests of science, but they do have things to say. John said that there is no out there out there. In other words, duality is an illusion. And so in this regard, fundamentally, where one travels is simply to different dimensions of mind. Just different dimensions of a reality made of mind stuff, mentation. And so in this way, you can look at the journey as one of increased subtlety, increased nuance, basically transitioning from gross, that would be the physicality, materiality, what we almost exclusively identify with, because that's what we spend most of our times with, but then we transition into a more subtle dimension of reality. And this is, in fact, where the pure lands, and again, one of the reasons they're called pure, just to put an exclamation point on that, is because they are, in fact, purified of materiality, purified of physicality. In other words, they're more empty. So the deeper renderings of a pure land is an empty land, a land that is empty of a reified, solid, physicalistic, materialist stance. And I'd like to play with both of these, Robert. I don't think we have to put all our eggs in one basket or another.
Right.
A little bit like what we talked about earlier. We can have
a creative mind tolerates ambiguity. You and I both know that. I'm also thinking how this relates very directly to the concept of travel in a subtle body, and this does come into your teaching and practice, I believe. I mean,
yes.
My mind goes to the Upanishads right now. I'm thinking of the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, the great forest book, where the soul is described as taking flight from the nest of the body in dreams as a swan leaves the nest and returns to it when it comes home. There in this beautiful image of the wonderful bird in flight is the image of travel in the subtle body, which is so widespread and has an extensive vocabulary in so many traditions. How does this idea of the subtle body and travel in the subtle body fit in with everything else that you're telling us?
Oh, definitely part and parcel. Yes, indeed. And this is, in fact, where dream yoga really bridges with Bardo Yoga. That again, the subtle body, which is made of this wind and these what are called mind droplets, the anatomy and physiology can get quite complex. But it fundamentally can, in fact, differentiate from this growth body and do this exactly the type of travel that you're talking about that's also mentioned in the Upanishads. This is classic dream yoga poa. It's actually one of the main practices of a little bit more esoteric form of Pure Land practice altogether. But again, I wonder, if you don't mind me just pinging back, is a type of contemplation to you, to us, and to our listeners. I believe this is an open-ended contemplation to look back, to look at this notion of travel altogether. To just contemplate as a type of thought experiment, looking back over your life, have you ever really gone anywhere? Have you ever, I love this, I've traveled to 50 countries over my life. Have I ever really gone anywhere? And I love this type of contemplation because it just throws a wrench in my conventional reality and helps me look at things in a different way. But to reinstate, I think what I'm hearing is the central aspect of this question for sure. In the Tibetan Pure Land teachings and the Bardo teachings, Dreamland, I'm sorry, the special dream body practice of dream yoga poa, for sure. Just like with the Upanishad rendering, one can leave this body, the subtle body, can differentiate from it, travel into these dimensions, and then come back reaping some of the rewards of that kind of travel, definitely.
Andrew, we're approaching our final break, and I'm going to quote you again to yourself to add another dimension to the conversation. Quote, this is Andrew in Dream Yoga, lucid dreaming is the ultimate in home entertainment. I just want to remind people of that because we've gone very deep and we've gone very serious and we've gone very profound, always passionate. But I just want people to know that you also agree with those of us who have found that lucid dreaming is, amongst everything else, a form of home entertainment. We'll be back after the break really to say thank you so much to Andrew and Dream On. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer.
All your live or pre-recorded webcasting needs, come to earthchannel.com. Get your web-based message out to a select group or the whole world. It's easy. A pioneer in webcasting, earthchannel.com provides the best products and services to big corporations and government users. And now, this same technology is available to you. They have the best earthcasting coders, servers, and products to meet your technical needs. But wait, don't want to mess with technical stress? No problem. They'll do it for you. earthchannel.com. Is your answer. You can use webcasting for lots of things like advertising, marketing, customer support, training, and don't forget web radio and TV. In fact, you're listening to a live Earthcast right now, so come to earthchannel.com. Actualize your audio or video webcasting needs today. You can't beat the friendly service or the price. Call earthchannel.com at 800-849-8978. That's 800-849-8978.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Way of the Dreamer. What a wonderful time we've had with Andrew Holacek, a great student and a great teacher of Vajrayana Buddhism, Dream Yoga, Lucid Dreaming. Thank you so much, Andrew.
Robert, this has been such a delight. It's always so fun to hang out with you. I feel like I'm with a kindred soul, and anytime, I'm always available for more conversations with such a mind.
Thank you so much. Your combination of clarity and passion and dedication is wonderful. So everybody, from now until next time, may your best dreams come true, and may you remember them.